Cattles and Rami.
Cattles and Rami. Cattles and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
All right, so great news yesterday, Rami. The extension of Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox. Aligned with Coach Mike Brown now. You have some stability. And I wanted to ask you about Vivek and how you feel about Vivek post-Monty extension. But before we get to that, let's hear from Doug Christie, who was on the show yesterday, about Monty getting that extension.
Monty and Wes together, the assistant general manager, they've done a tremendous job. Like, they put together a ball club. They've hired a staff. They've done many things behind the scenes that you guys don't see, that to try to support the things that we do on a day-to-day basis. And then to now pair that with success, I think it's the right thing to do. I think it lends to the stability and the roots in the ground that when the wind blows, the tree doesn't fall over, because now we're starting to begin to have something that is sustainable.
We're starting to begin to have something that is sustainable. It all starts at the top, Rami. Looking at this move, everybody wanted Vivek to get this done. He got it done. How do you look at the owner right now?
So we're good, right? Everybody's good?
You tell me.
Everybody loves Vivek now? Everything's good? Because I know when I got to town, there weren't necessarily the best feelings about Vivek when it comes to his job and his tenure as the owner of the Sacramento Kings. And this is definitely a very good sign that things are moving in the right direction. I don't remember who he was talking to or what publication it was in, but saw some quotes from Vivek just a couple weeks ago, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, admitting that he's made mistakes as the owner and that they've made mistakes. The Kings as an organization have made mistakes since he took over, and he sort of repeated something that I've repeated a number of times in my still short time so far here on Sactown Sports, Nick, which is everybody in all walks of life and all professions make mistakes. The smartest people and the most successful people are usually the ones who recognize those mistakes the quickest and correct them. And he said, we've learned from those. We're moving forward. We feel we're better for the lessons learned from those mistakes. And that's what I want to hear. And signing Monty to the extension and getting the stability and, like Doug Christie said, building the foundation for some sustained success here. Certainly things are moving in the right direction. The only question I still kind of have when it comes to Vivek, and so far so good, is whether or not he's done meddling as an owner, and if he's just going to let Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox and the rest of the personnel staff do their jobs, or is he going to step in? You and I were questioning when Mike Brown was hired. Is this a Vivek hire? Is this a Monty McNair hire? Because we know Vivek's obsession with the Golden State Warriors and wanting to recreate what they have here, or what they have there here in Sacramento. And we wondered if that was just Vivek reaching into the Warriors' hat again to try and pull that rabbit out.
Well, also don't forget the Mark Jackson thing when Vivek, you know, according to a lot of people plugged in, said, oh, I think it was Sam Amick who said, look, Mark Jackson would not be even on the list of like 5 or 6 people in this head coaching search if it was, you know, Monty and Wes, if it was just a Monty and Wes list. And the feeling was that Mark Jackson was on the list solely because Vivek was the one that was interested. So Vivek still had at least, you know, a seat at that table during the coaching.
Can he stay out of the way? Can he just sign the check, sit in the front row with 50 Cent and enjoy the show? You know what I mean? Can he stay out of the way is the only question I have. But I think he's gone a long way in rebuilding the trust with and the credibility with Kings fans.
Yeah. David Flores, Workman, YouTube.com, Sactown Sports 1140 says, Vivek has begun righting his wrongs, as Rami was saying a little bit earlier. Love to see accountability and ownership, as well as a willingness to learn and adapt. Many owners think their way is the only way, but he has changed. Again, that's David Flores, Workman, YouTube channel, YouTube.com, Sactown Sports 1140. Don't forget to give us that thumbs up. Very little effort from you helps us an awful lot. The more likes we get, the more eyeballs, the bigger the community grows. That's how YouTube works. So any help you can give us with that, if you enjoy what we're doing here at Sactown Sports, we would love that thumbs up from you. What I look at is being a CEO in essence, right? And I think like Vivek is showing the signs with this extension to Monty and giving Monty the latitude to make these decisions, going back to certainly the Halliburton Domas trade. A good CEO, an effective CEO, is one that understands their strengths and also understands their weaknesses, Rami, and can acknowledge their weaknesses. And when they realize that weakness has popped up, to, you know, change things as quickly as they can. Now, it might have taken longer than people wanted, and it did take Vivek probably longer than it should have. But the past is a past. That's no longer an issue, because right now he is acting as a very good CEO, understanding strengths, putting people in power to make decisions that should be in power to make decisions, delegating, right? Allowing those people to do their jobs. You hired Monty McNair to do a job because you believed during the interview process that he could do the job. Let him do the job because you trust him to do the job. Mm-hmm. That's what top CEOs and managers do. They put people in positions to succeed, and they allow them to do their jobs without getting in the way over and over and over again. And right now, that's what Vivek is doing. I also think we can look at the timeline, and all of us wanted this Monty extension to happen before it did. And I wanted the extension to happen when Mike Brown came in, because I said, hey, marry the deals together, which they ended up doing. But it was at least smart to pull this trigger before the deadline, because this team is Monty's vision. And you want him going in clear-headed, ready to roll, focused on what this team's going to look like, not just the rest of this year, but the next 2-3 years. You want the person who is driving this, you know, this car down the road to have a full feel of, I'm the guy, these are the moves we have to make, and this is what we are going to do. So I thought getting this done before the deadline, McNair not feeling like he has to have a quick fix, quote unquote, just in case he might still be in trouble.
Right.
That was also good by Vivek.
It's hard working when you feel like your boss is looming over you and watching every decision, and it might cost you your job. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of what Monty, or it seems like from the outside looking in, has been dealing with up until, I mean, Jason Anderson said it when we talked to him in the last hour, Nick, that up until now, Monty McNair or Vivek was sort of waiting and saying, prove it, show me,
yep,
before I give you that job security.
Yep. Which is, you know, to me,
those are tough circumstances to perform under, man.
Yeah, that's not what I would have done. That's not how I would have handled it. But, you know, Vivek handled it the way he handled it. And the result is all that matters. Monty's here long term. Wes is here long term. Mike Brown's here long term. They're all married. They're all happy. And this team is winning. All that matters. Certain things could have changed along the way, but the end result, the finish line to get the deal done, and Vivek realizing the strengths and the weaknesses and allowing his people to do the work they've been hired to do is landscape changing for any franchise, and that's what's going down right now. 916-339-1140 is the text line. Don't forget about our good friends Capital Casino. They're conveniently located at 411 North 16th Street in downtown Sacramento. Is Brock Purdy the 2023 QB1 for the Niners no matter what? We'll get to that and more with Jeff Howe in 90 seconds.
Cattles and Robbie. Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
Join the Sacramento Kings on Thursday, January 26th for the Kingpin Classic Charity Bowling Tournament. Presented by Raley's. Bowl and mingle with your favorite players, coaches, Kings dancers, the 916 crew, and Slams It. All while supporting the Sacramento Kings Foundation. Learn more at kings.com/bowling. Your afternoon home for Kings talk and more.
This is Cattles and Rami
on Sacktown Sports.
Our guy Jeff Howe joins us from The Athletic, of course. As always, he is on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Jeff usually joins us on Tuesdays at this time, but he was nice enough. He was gracious enough to move to today with the breaking news yesterday of Monty McNair's contract extension. Thank you, Jeff, for that, and thank you for joining us. Let's get into some Brock Purdy talk. I've seen reports over the last several days saying Brock Purdy is no doubt the QB1 in 2023. Is there anything that Purdy could do to make Shanahan or Lynch actually go in a different direction than making him the guy next year?
I guess if the optics are poor, if they lose this weekend and he plays really poorly and then has like some sort of disastrous offseason, like, you know, gets a little too full of himself, doesn't come into camp in the right shape, and Trey Lance looks like they hoped that Trey Lance would look for the last 2 years, then yeah, of course, things could change. But I don't know how you could leave this season, regardless of the outcome, really. I mean, with all of that stuff in mind, all of that stuff would be unforeseen. I don't know how you come out of this season thinking anything other than Brock Purdy being the starting quarterback next year.
Do you think being on the road in Philadelphia, of all places, finally rattles this rookie who has rarely looked rattled at all since stepping in for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, it's interesting. I've spoken to a handful of people around the league. I've been working on these stories every week of the playoffs, just getting coaches, executives to weigh in on who they think is going to win each matchup. And everybody I've spoken to so far is picking the Eagles. And it's not a knock on San Francisco. It's just this everybody is so impressed with what the Eagles have done. They just think the Eagles are a more complete team. But the number one factor really is the pass rush. And the Cowboys were able to create a lot of pressure, made Purdy look a little more pedestrian than he had in his previous six starts. And they only scored, 19 points? So well below the average of about 32.5 that they've averaged in his starts. So recency bias, I think, is working against them. But then in totality, I mean, the Eagles had 70 sacks in the regular season. Like, that's just absurd. It's 15 more than any other team, which is, you know, they averaged more than double the amount of sacks. They totaled more than double the amount of sacks than a quarter of the league. So they're getting after guys at an unbelievable rate. And that's got the people that I've spoken to concerned that Purdy isn't going to look as good as he has. And in that road environment, it's going to be tough.
Jeff Howe is with us. Jeff, today we found out that the AP finalists for Coach of the Year, Brian Daboll, Doug Peterson, Kyle Shanahan, who do you think lands the Coach of the Year award? And who would you vote for out of those three guys?
Well, I think it's probably going to be Daboll. And I think that, I mean, you just, man, like, it depends on what you're looking for, because this kind of goes back to the argument that, well, for about 15 out of, I don't know, 18 seasons, Bill Belichick probably should have been the NFL's coach of the year.
Right.
But so that's what kind of hurts Kyle Shanahan here. This team had huge expectations, but then you look at what they did. He's got a third string quarterback playing lights out in the NFC championship game right now. I know you're not supposed to vote on the playoff results and all that other stuff, but like, it's just two totally different types of awards, and you got 50 people coming together, and you don't know who prioritizes what. And I think Daboll kind of had this thing cemented for most of the season, that how much is the Jaguars' late charge with Peterson and the way that he got Trevor Lawrence playing and set up for the future, how much is that going to change the voters' minds? So it's like, it's three almost entirely different arguments, and you have no idea what everybody's actually prioritizing.
Who do you think, who does Jeff Howe think has done the best, most impressive coaching job this year?
I would say Kyle Shanahan. It's just, what's the purpose of playing an NFL season? It's to try to win a Super Bowl. And Daboll and Peterson did some unbelievably impressive things. I take absolutely nothing away from those guys. But Kyle Shanahan has this team on the doorstep of the Super Bowl with a third-string quarterback. And not just that. I mean, we talked about the stats last week. The Niners are scoring more points than any team in the league since Brock Purdy took over. Like, that's not supposed to happen. Like, if they were, like, top 10, I think everybody would be like, oh, my goodness, Shanahan's pretty good at this. But they're number one, and they're set up to potentially – I know, like, citing the people around the league I spoke to who think the Eagles are going to win this game. But, like, this is a toss-up. This is a really damn good team, and Shanahan withstood a lot of adversity. The injuries earlier in the year that spread way beyond the quarterback position. I mean, it's just, he did such a great job.
Jeff Howe is with us from The Athletic on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Jeff, Mahomes said he's okay today. He hasn't been seen with a walking boot. Of course, we know that there always could be some tricks of the trade pulled in Kansas City, like a lot of other teams would do with their quarterback ailing. What should we anticipate seeing on Sunday from Patrick Mahomes?
I think it's going to look a lot like what you saw in the second half against Jacksonville. I mean, I covered that game over the weekend, and he just didn't look anything like himself. You know, the guy who was probably going to win the MVP award. He was – you saw it when – I was shocked that he came back in the second half. And, I mean, just looking at the optics, Chad Henne takes over, marches him 98 yards down the field. Before they even got to midfield, they had a 3rd-and-3. They called timeout. Mahomes was out of the locker room on the sideline with his helmet on, and they still didn't put him in for that 3rd-and-3. So that seemed to signify to everybody watching that Mahomes' day was done. And then he goes into the locker room. He somehow talks his way back onto the field. And you saw that early scramble on that first possession out of the second half when he made like a quick burst to evade a little bit of pressure and then got just past the first down marker. And then it was like he crumbled. He had no strength in that leg to keep moving, to get that downfield speed and acceleration that he needs. So they went scoreless over a couple possessions. Then you saw Andy Reid really scheme up some things. It helped their cause that the Jaguars were allergic to covering Travis Kelce. And they did just enough to kind of escape with a win in that one. But I would be very surprised if he's mobile. The other concern is, as we saw in the second half against Jacksonville, the accuracy was very streaky. You know, you saw him try to get some throws out into the toward the sideline that were underthrown. That's because he wasn't able to press off that foot. You know, I know he's tough. He's going to deserve all the credit in the world for playing through this. But you don't just get better after a week when you have a high ankle sprain.
How much is the chip on the shoulder of the Bengals playing a role in their run now to another AFC championship after taking care of the Bills last week?
It's kind of hilarious at this point. So, like, I understand why they were ticked off at the league about the whole neutral site thing. Like, they have every right to be pissed off about that. But the whole, like, hey, nobody believes in us. Like, no, like, you guys are really good, and everybody knows that you're really good. So it reminds me of some of those, like, I know I cite the Patriots a lot when we do these calls, but, like, the early 2000s Patriots who were like, yeah, nobody believes in us. It's like, well, guys, it's 2004. You've won two of the last three Super Bowls. I'm pretty sure everybody knows that you're the best team in the league right now. I'm not saying the Bengals are the best team in the league, but they've got the quarterback who's playing the best in the league. Lou Anarumo has that defense playing absolutely lights out. I mean, that was a masterpiece against Buffalo. But they're finding ways to motivate themselves. And whatever it takes, I mean, all the power to you to avoid any sort of mental letdown at this stage of the season. That's important because you got talented teams that just, I'm not saying they check out, but they might not have the same urgency to go out and win as they might have had earlier in the season when they were playing at their best or whatever. So, hey, they're using it to their advantage, and Zach Taylor has done a phenomenal job with that.
Last one for you, Jeff. Got about a minute. Want to squeeze it in. If you were a betting man, where do you think Derek Carr ends up?
Oh, boy. I think all of the NFC South teams should be interested, and because, you know, assuming Tom Brady leaves Tampa and, you know, the Jets have to be interested. So those are probably the five on the short list right now.
Jeff, you're the best, man. We'll catch up with you again next week. Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good week.
You too. There goes Jeff Howe of The Athletic. He was on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Yeah, the Jets are definitely looking for a quarterback. The Zach Wilson stuff that came out recently, even though there's been some pushback to it, doesn't sound like Zach Wilson was necessarily leading that locker room.
No.
As has the QB1. So I think the Jets are a possibility with Derek Carr. The NFC South, it would be interesting. And the Raiders don't have enough time to be picky, right? Like, they've got – the way the contract works, they got to get rid of Derek Carr sooner rather
Pretty
than later.
Soon. Yeah.
So I think it happens quickly.
How about Indy?
Indy's one on the list. Spot. Yeah, I saw something about Rodgers in Indy.
Saw that too.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Indy's getting spicy.
Quarterback carousel is going to be crazy.
It better
crazy.
Get spicy at coach.
Quarterback carousel is going to be crazy this offseason.
I hope so.
I can't wait.
I really hope it is. 424 on this hump day.
Hump day.
Thanks to Coastside Medical Clinic for that time check in the 4 o'clock hour. We play a QB versus head coach game of who's to blame coming up next.
Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
With your Sacktown Sports headlines, I'm Simone Rickford.
good people of Sacramento and disciples of the Beam rejoice. Kings announced yesterday that general manager Monty McNair has agreed to a multi-year contract extension. The contract for the Kings' assistant general manager Wes Wilcox has also been extended. The announcement is widely welcomed as McNair has been considered instrumental in ascending the franchise into Western Conference contention. Kings take on the Toronto Raptors tonight to conclude their January home stand at Golden 1 Center. If there wasn't already enough to cheer for, with a win over the Raptors tonight, Sacramento can improve to 9 games over .500, their best start since the 2004-2005 season. Stay tuned for all of your Beam Watch coverage right here on Sactown Sports, starting with game night at 5:30 following Cattles and Rami. I'm Simone. Those are your Sactown Sports headlines. We got Who's to Blame in the chamber right now. Don't go anywhere. Here's Cattles and Rami.
Who did what and why?
Who are you pointing the finger at?
It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you place the blame.
It's Who to Blame
on Cattles and Rami.
Yeah, yeah, on a Wednesday. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Who's to blame? Rami loves pointing fingers at
people. I do love pointing fingers.
Loves it.
Love it.
Blaming other people for his shortcomings.
Always. I'm perfect.
Oh,
what did you do wrong? You know? It's my motto in life.
Stop BSing the people in this country.
I am perfect. Hashtag blessed. All right. Let's talk about the Raiders. We spend a lot of time on the Kings and Niners for obvious reasons.
For good reason.
The Kings are the team
right
here in the city. They're playing great, and also the Niners happen to be playing for the NFC Championship this weekend. But the Raiders are still on our radar, Rami. We are still paying attention. We are still reading and watching everything that has to do with Vegas and what's happening with Josh McDaniels and Derek Carr. We just talked to Jeff Howe of The Athletic about Derek Carr's future. And there have been some reports recently, Rami, that have been kind of swirling around within the ether about how Josh McDaniels was very, very tough on Derek Carr.
Yes.
And that they would have these team meetings every week. And a lot of times this season, McDaniels would chew out Derek Carr at these team meetings. He would light him up in front of everybody. He would give him the business.
The quote was, "Carr has never had his mail read in front of the entire team like that."
Stop reading my mail. So, The idea of this is not only did he have his mail read in front of the team, but Carr started to grow tired of this.
Yes.
This started to irritate him, annoy him, frustrate him. He started to be, you know, a little defensive maybe about how McDaniels was coaching him and some of the stuff that he was talking about in front of the room. Meanwhile, Carr came out. Was it a tweet or an IG post or whatever?
It was a tweet, I believe. Yeah.
Like, he just came out and said he's going to keep
the business to himself. Yeah, it was on Twitter. Yeah, he said, "Thank you to all the people reaching out, trying to give me their platform to tell my side of what happened. It's the hardest thing in the world not to jump on every interview and tell the whole truth. Thank you, but I'm choosing to move on and give our next city our best." As Pro Football Talk pointed out, by saying he won't, quote, tell the whole truth, Carr is implying that there's a whole truth that hasn't been told about what went wrong last year.
Of course. I mean, ipso facto,
yes.
I'm deuces out of Vegas, and I ain't doing your pod.
Right.
That's pretty much what he said. Like, thanks, but no thanks to the offers. I'm not going to be the podcast guy. I'm not running around getting interviewed by everybody. I'm not going to pull a Tyrese Halliburton and show up on
you
every pod.
You have the guts to say it to my face.
And tell people how, you know, frustrated I was about the Sacramento Kings trading me to the 150th person asking me the question. I'm gonna stay out of that kind of business. So we look at who's to blame, and the question, Rami, this week is, who is to blame for the deterioration of the McDaniels-Carr relationship?
It's Josh McDaniels. It's 100%
Josh
McDaniels.
I love how Rami is so, like, defiant when he answers the who's to blame.
He knew.
It is obviously Josh McDaniels, man. And I have, you know what? I have precedence, Nick Cattles.
Uh-oh.
I have precedence. This man has a track record. And, okay, in the article where they say Carr has never had his mail read in front of the entire team like that, that was from SI, they point out that Josh McDaniels treated everybody that way. And there were guys in the locker room that appreciated that nobody was off the hook and everybody was held accountable. And, sure, there is something to be said for that, but – Nick, you've been in management before.
Yes, recently.
Yes, recently you have.
Like a month ago.
Part of management and overseeing people is knowing what works for people. You know what? What's going to get the best out of them? And I don't know if Tom Brady broke Josh McDaniels and he thinks everybody is Tom Brady and everybody can be read the riot act or be picked apart so that they can achieve some level of greatness. But Josh McDaniels has illustrated now he does not know how to handle quarterbacks when he walks into organizations that already have established quarterbacks. I don't know if you remember this story, Nick, but of Josh McDaniels' first go-round as a head coach in Denver, shortly after he moved into his office at Dove Valley, he called Jay Cutler and his agent, Buzz Cook, for a closed-door meeting. The story goes that McDaniels began with a 20-minute dissertation of his resume, how he'd worked his way up the ranks in New England to become Bill Belichick's right-hand man with the offense, and how the team would have been nowhere the year before without his tutelage of backup Matt Castle. He continued on with his justification of his hiring by Bolin. He began to bash and berate Cutler and his game to the tune of a verbal flogging neither had ever witnessed. The expletive-laden diatribe went on for a few minutes, after which Cook stood up and told Cutler they were leaving. As they walked down the long hallway past Bolin's office, Cutler turned to Buss and said, "Get me out of here. I don't care how you do it." This guy has a track record of walking into organizations and alienating their franchise quarterbacks. You can't treat everybody the same, man. If that was rubbing Derek Carr the right way, you knew Derek Carr was a key to you winning. Figure out a different way to get through to this guy and don't wreck that relationship and lose the most important player in your organization.
Two words for Derek Carr: play better. If you play better, you don't have to get ripped by the head coach. If you play better, then you wouldn't be embarrassed in these meetings. Tom Brady, this comes from the Bill Belichick camp, and this is why McDaniels does what he does. Nobody would get ripped harder and worse in front of the entire team than Tom Brady. After winning multiple Super Bowls,
but some
after
guys
being
can
called
take
to
it,
go.
And some guys can't. You have to find a way to deliver the message.
He's not taking personal shots at the guy, Rami. This is saying you need to do a better job. Mike Brown asks for accountability from all the players in the room. And he rips the players when he needs to. He just said the other day, I lit up Malik Monk. Like, it is your job to make sure that you keep the quarterback accountable. If you handle the quarterback with kid gloves, and everybody else in the room is going to see that. And they're going to say, why aren't I treated that way?
Because you're not him.
Because
you're
not. It's not like Derek Carr is the greatest quarterback that's ever walked the face of the planet.
No, but Derek Carr was the only quarterback that Josh McDaniels had. And Derek Carr, if you lost him, you weren't going to have a good season. And that's exactly what happened.
I don't agree with this idea of let's treat the quarterback completely different because he can't put his big boy pants on and get criticized.
I'm not saying just the quarterback.
Well.
I'm saying
there's absolutely nothing wrong criticizing a quarterback about his play if he plays like crap.
Everybody should be held accountable. But your messaging can't be the same to all 53 guys. Expecting them to all be uniform and monolithic in the way that you can treat them and talk to them and coach them up and get the best out of them is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous notion to have.
Can't
and to think every quarterback that you're going to have is going to be Tom Brady and have that mindset and that mental toughness is he's going to keep failing if he keeps expecting Tom Brady to walk into his quarterback's room.
I don't think he's expecting Tom Brady to walk into his quarterback's room, or maybe he is now since Brady's a free agent.
I mean,
agent.
Yeah, now Tom Brady might actually walk into his quarterback's room. So.
I think he's looking at the quarterback, and he's asking more from the quarterback, and he's keeping him accountable in front of the whole team. Again, I don't think that he's taking personal shots. And as the teammates said in that story, hey, man, McDaniels, it was equal opportunity, and he wasn't taking personal shots. He wasn't trying to undress somebody personally. He was saying, look, you got to make that throw. You can't throw that pick there. What are we doing? What are we trying to do? I mean, football's a tough game. It's a physical game, and I don't think as long as the guy is not taking personal shots at somebody and he's not going overboard, and there is no account in that story saying that he went overboard with Derek Carr. It was he treated Carr like he treated everybody else in the room.
And I don't think it's one film session a week.
Like I
don't think you can treat everybody the same, look, man. I just don't think that's how you get the best out of every guy.
I'm actually a fan of Derek Carr, but I feel like people have, there's a lot of excuse making for Derek Carr. Like he didn't play well. He didn't play well enough. He didn't play well enough to keep his job. He didn't play well enough, you know, consistently enough. That's just the way it is.
That's terrible.
And if he's got an issue, then he's going to go to another team. He's going to be starting for another team, and he can prove the Raiders and he can prove Josh McDaniels wrong and get the last laugh. Like, Jay Cutler was a guy known for like smoking cigarettes and not taking his job seriously. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh,
Jay Cutler eventually got that reputation. When Josh McDaniels went to Denver, Jay Cutler was the rising star of young quarterbacks in the NFL. The rising star. Kyle Shanahan had that guy on a fast track to being a franchise quarterback. Look at his first 2 years in the league.
What I'm saying is...
But Josh McDaniels would rather have Tim Tebow.
Do you think Jay Cutler just woke up and all of a sudden forgot work ethic? He just didn't care anymore?
I don't think he stopped. I don't think Jay
Cutler... Or do you think Jay Cutler got a lot from his arm talent in Chicago and in Denver early years?
You know I'm a Bears fan, Nick. And Jay Cutler had his issues. I don't think work ethic was one of them. He spent plenty of time in the film room. He just had bad decision-making and... never really had a lot of help around him.
I don't think Jay Cutler was ever seen as a super rising star. I think Jay Cutler was seen as somebody who had a great arm. So was Jeff George.
I mean, look at his first 2 years in the league.
I am. He threw nine touchdowns, five picks. His second year in the league, 20 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. His third year in the league, 25 touchdowns, 18 picks.
25 touchdowns by his third year. How many yards?
He had 18 interceptions.
How many yards? Again,
4,500 yards. He had more than 4,000 yards once in his career. He went to Chicago. His first year in Chicago, after he left the awful Josh McDaniels, he threw 26 interceptions.
Well, I can tell you, he went to Chicago and it's Chicago.
That was his fourth year.
They break QBs.
He was 26 years old.
They break quarterbacks in Chicago. It's what they do.
Well, that's probably true. Not even probably. Hopefully
it's their franchise signature. It's what they do. I fear for Justin Fields, okay?
I was going to say, hopefully don't do it, Justin Fields. Our two all-time great quarterbacks walking away. We'll have the latest next.
With you 1 mile at a time during the afternoon drive. Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
Just found out that this is the last season of NCIS LA. I watch that show with Kelly.
Really?
Every week.
You watch all the NCISs?
Not Hawaii. Okay. Out on Hawaii.
I was
out on New Orleans, too. New Orleans got bad quick.
Dude, when I watch the NFL on CBS, every show on CBS that they run promos for looks terrible.
You know,
I don't know if they're just bad at making promos.
You know what they do? You know what they do a lot?
Every show looks awful.
You know what they do a lot?
What's that?
They just take movie adaptations. Like, I think True Lies is their latest one.
Yeah.
Based on the blockbuster movie like 30 years ago.
You know what
True Lies, though. Love True Lies.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, there you go.
Great movie.
You know what looks god awful is Fire Country? Ugh.
Oh, the main actor of that show is from SEAL Team. I watched SEAL Team with Kelly.
Also looked terrible in the promos.
No, that show's
when
good.
It was on CBS.
SEAL Team's good.
Like I said, maybe they have a problem with making promos. Maybe they need a new promo department. But the shows look god awful.
All the networks are like that.
Awful.
All the major networks. Because one has their own. There's Chicago Fire. There's the one with Rob Lowe on Fox that's a firefighter. Like,
what's
they've all
the,
got that.
What's the show?
I watch all the Chicago's. Med, Fire,
really?
PD.
I'm from Chicago, and I have no interest whatsoever in any of them.
The Bear. Well, that's as Chicago's I get.
Chicago Med's not great.
What's the show on Fox?
Chicago PD's pretty good.
Like the country music family? Sigourney Weaver, I think, is
no
on
idea.
It? No?
Or, yeah.
No idea what you're
talking
about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I only
Monarch,
know...
Oh. I don't know.
That looks like the worst show in the history of television shows, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I only know these because of football commercials. Yes, I've never watched any of them, but also when you say it, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's terrible. They all look terrible.
All right.
I don't know who's making these shows, but they all... Oh, Monarch. Monarch is
the
show.
Well, NCIS LA was like this weird thing. Before we get back to football here for a second, then we'll get to Kings.
Susan Sarandon.
Kings talking about 10 minutes.
My bad.
So, you know, I was talking to Kelly about this. So NCIS LA has been really weird. Like, this season, a lot of the main characters, like LL Cool J and stuff, and like all the main characters, they've missed multiple shows this year. Where like, they'll have like two of the main characters off the show. Like 2 weeks ago or last week, they had like three of the main characters or four of the main characters weren't on the show. And I'm like, What? So I said to Kelly at the beginning of the year when it started doing this, by like week three, I was like, this is the final season. She's like, why? I said, I can guarantee you that they went together to the network and said, we'll do one more year, but we ain't doing a full 20-some-odd episode.
Do they have other gigs? Are they off on like movie
no.
sets or something?
So Kelly looked it up and there was like this thing like, oh, it's a new showrunner. And the showrunner believes that you shouldn't have all the major stars on every show. So, you know, pretty much less is more. And I'm like, what? I've never heard that in my life. You take a show and you start taking the best people off the show because less is – nobody ever does that. And so I didn't believe it. So Kelly told me today in the chat, she said NCIS LA's done this year. I said, I was on top of it.
I love when
I
people
it.
Think they're smart.
Showrunner crap.
By the way, Monarch canceled after one season. I was right. It was terrible.
Oh, a show on NBC got canceled last year that Kelly and I got into. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but we weren't happy because there was a cliffhanger at the end.
Oh, I hate that.
And I was like, ugh.
I hate that.
Anyway.
Give me some closure. I need closure.
Both frustrated and angry.
Cattles and Rami, Sacktown Sports on this Wednesday. The Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers circus is alive and well. We've gone through this now. We went through it last year with both of them. It feels like for the last 3 or 4 years, we've gone through this with Aaron Rodgers. Here was Brady with Jim Gray on his podcast, Let's Go, this week.
Tom, you're leaving everybody guessing. You said you'll take your time. Do you have any type of a timetable as to what you might want to do regarding your football career?
Jim, if I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it. Okay? I'm taking it a day at a time.
Jeez, Tom.
Dude.
Relax a little.
That's your co-host.
You caught him on a bad day, huh?
That's literally his co-host. That's Tom Brady's podcast.
Look, if we had no FCC, I'd probably answer you back like that at least twice a show. At least twice a show, you'd get that from me.
It's not like he was ambushed by some reporter.
This is Jim Gray.
This isn't TMZ when he was walking out. Hey, Tom, what are you going to do this offseason? This is his co-host on his podcast asking him, what are you going to do this offseason?
Jim Gray doesn't ask any tough questions to Tom Brady. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
That's why he is hosting that podcast with Tom.
Jim, if I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it.
All right. Back to you. Jim Gray must have been like, whoa.
Damn, bro.
And I would bet you that Jim Gray told Tom he was going to ask him that.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah.
You think that was all orchestrated? Do you think that was Tom setting the tone for the offseason and anybody who's got
some
questions?
In fairness, for the full clip, it was like the second time he asked him about it.
Well.
Okay.
So there you go. So maybe Tom kind of brushed it aside the first time and didn't want to talk about it. And Jim was like, but no, Tom. People want to know. And he was like, bleep you, bleep everything, bleep this show, bleep the word.
If I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it.
How dare you ask me that question, Jim Gray? How dare you? So you've got TB12 all fired up, and then you've got AR12 with Pat McAfee. Here's how Aaron Rodgers handled the question about his future.
Usually you would think they would wait until maybe the off week between the championship weeks and the Super Bowl to drum up some storylines, because there is, you know, two great games this Sunday, and I have, you know, some people that love to track that stuff, so I've been made aware of it. Listen, there's heroes and villains in sports and entertainment. I've been cast as the villain, especially the last few years, and so that is the way that, you know, a lot of things I said are often interpreted.
Rami floated the possibility that he may have been inebriated. I think the way he slurred Super Bowl convinced me.
What is?
Man, he's just chilling, bro.
What's worse?
He's just maxing and relaxing.
What's worse? Brady's complete overreaction.
Jim, if I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it.
Or the woe is me, I'm the villain, Aaron Rodgers act. What's more insufferable? It's a tight race.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, it's a tight race.
Yeah.
Every time Aaron's the villain, even though he sets up all these storylines,
right.
He's always the guy that's the villain.
He's always like, hey, man, what's the big deal?
Hey, I'm just chilling. It's got nothing to do with me wanting tens of millions of dollars more, man. It's got nothing to do with that.
What are you harshing my buzz for, bro?
I mean, I found my center like 3 years ago. I don't even know what you're even bothering me with this. And Brady's like, I've had enough, man.
Jim, if I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it.
Brady's ripping his shirt off like 1980s Hulk Hogan and Aaron Rodgers like Bob Marley with his feet up.
Did you hear Rodgers like wax philosophical when they say the grass is always greener on the other side? I say the grass is greener wherever you water it.
That was deep, Rami.
I hate you. I stop.
Jim, if I knew what I was going to do, I'd have already done it.
Insufferable. It's a great word.
It's Aaron Rodgers, by the way. Because I could believe that Tom got irritated and just kind of lashed out more than like, oh, I'm the villain. I'm the villain. Everybody feel bad for me.
Shocker, Nick didn't say Tom Brady.
Nobody's saying that Aaron Rodgers is a villain, but they're just saying, are you going to play next year?
It does seem like, I will say, in Aaron Rodgers' defense, like the season isn't even over yet, and I already turned on the talking head shows, and they're like, why is Aaron holding the Packers hostage? He needs to give them a decision. Like, dude, they can't do anything yet. They can't do anything for like a month at least. Nobody's going anywhere or moving. What? Why is Aaron Rodgers? I mean, he is kind of made out to be the villain, Nick.
Who walked off the field with Randall Cobb arm in arm and pushed the cameraman away when the cameraman got in front of him and told whoever it was, I'm going to keep this jersey. This one's a special one. Right in front of the cameras.
It was an emotional moment.
Look, I'm not saying that Rodgers is, you know, a bad guy or whatever. He's insufferable, dude. He's done this his entire career. He has always been calculated. He has always...
Oh, he's definitely calculated.
Like, he's always, like, set himself up as the woe-is-me character. People are coming after me. He's, like, the only dude that he's won one Super Bowl. He's considered one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He's lost a bunch of playoff games in dramatic fashion because he's played bad. And he turns around and he's just like, oh, it's just always on me, man. I'm the villain. Why are you going to paint me as a villain? Like, because you orchestrate this stuff. You're the one that leaked. There's no doubt Aaron Rodgers leaked a few years ago on draft day. Of all days, on draft day.
Yeah.
That he was thinking he was going to go somewhere else.
No doubt.
Like, so give me a break. Like, you built the story. You got to live with it, man. That's how the cookie crumbles, as they say. I don't know who they are. You can only pick one for head coach of the year. This is good. Who wins? Shanahan or Mike Brown? Talk about it next.